This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
He spins off a check, put it out in front for Scheifele. He just couldn't fashion it to his stick. Back the other way on the far side is Crosby. Avoids a couple of checks in front for Letang in the empty net. He shoots and scores. Crosby does a real good job of protecting the puck while skating up the ice into the middle for Letang across the line. Unimpeded, he puts it into the yawning cage. 4-0 Pittsburgh. That'll do it tonight.
Our buddy Paul Edmonds with the call last night here on TSN 1290. It was not a very good night for both the Winnipeg Jets and the Manitoba Moose. The Moose falling in Texas to the Dallas Stars as well. Both of the True North teams going 0-2 last night on Friday night. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all you joining us this morning on TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuke and Ezra Ginsberg, producer Sean Assor doing his magic on the other side of the board. Gentlemen, good morning. Happy New Year. First time we've been back together since the calendar rolled into 2019. So good to see you both on this Saturday, the 5th day of January.
Can we still say Happy New Year? We did a Wednesday show.
I saw you. I haven't seen Dave.
Okay.
I mean, I'm polite. I don't know if you want to. Have you seen Dave?
I think after you get to like January 3rd, I don't think you can say Happy New Year anymore.
We can say happy birthday to my mom.
Happy birthday to Cheryl. Nice to see how old's Cheryl turning? Well, 39 years young?
Say, you don't disclose an age at this point.
I know.
Drew,
39 years again. 39th birthday again. In any event.
I just realized, actually, her birthday's tomorrow.
Well, the early candidate for terrible son of the year is Dave Minuke, everybody. So happy birthday tomorrow. How about or happy early birthday?
Yeah, I just wanted to get my mom on the radio. It's not a big deal.
Okay, there you go. Do you know when your birthday is?
Yeah, that
are you going to be like Will Ferrell in Old School when you forget your birthday again?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. In any event, let's talk about last night's Jets game. It was not a very good performance by the hometown team last night, falling by a 4-0 margin to the Pittsburgh Penguins, a place where they certainly just don't win. The Jets don't win there. The Atlanta Thrashers didn't win there. And, you know, again, it'll be another season unless they play. unless these two teams meet in the Stanley Cup final, it'll be another year where the Jets do not win in Pittsburgh. A bit of a bizarre game, a couple weird bounces, the third goal by the Penguins where Connor Hellebuck thought he made a great save, turns out he doesn't. Just not a very good performance all around by the Jets. They did seem a step slow against a Pittsburgh Penguins team that right now is turning into a juggernaut.
Right, and you didn't have Dustin Byfuglien, but they're not going to use that as an excuse, but also they didn't have Nikolaj Ehlers, right? So, you know, everyone had to move up a line, right? So you had Andrew Kopp and you had Kyle Connor playing on the top line, and then you obviously only had the 11 forwards. But yeah, I agree, Drew. It was one of those games where sometimes you just have to say, we didn't play very well. We just didn't have it tonight, right?
Yeah.
And I really think that was the case for the Jets. And, you know, they had 4 days off since their last game, right, against the Wild. And it was one of those situations where, you know, you saw the Jets, I think, gaining some steam in the second period. I thought the second period was the Jets' best period. And if you remember, right before Dominic Simone scores,
the third goal for the Penguins.
The third goal, and obviously we're going to talk about that because originally the Jets thought that Hellebuck made the save. But right before that goal, not right before, but a couple of minutes before, Tyler Myers had a really good rush. And I actually thought Myers was their best defenseman yesterday. And sure, you had, you know, Dmitry Kulikov and Joe Morrow having a bit of a tough night. But, you know, Myers had a really good scoring chance, and it looked like the Jets were maybe going to make it interesting, make it a one-goal game.
Mm-hmm.
And after, you know, Dominic Simone scores, I mean, you go down 3-0, you're already not playing that well, you're not generating enough offense, and you kind of knew that was the killer goal. When you're down 2 goals, you still have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of hockey to be played, but in the third period, we saw that. I mean, how often have we seen Paul Maurice pull his goaltender with 5.5, 6 minutes left? You just don't see that very often.
Oh, that's the NHL equivalent of a Hail Mary.
Well exactly. And I don't have a problem, Drew, with Maurice doing that because you're down 3-0. I mean, you're down to 11 forwards. Why not go for it?
you have nothing to lose at that point in time. You're right. So, you know, they give up the fourth goal into the empty net. It's not like that's, you know, the difference in the game by any stretch. I think most people, yeah, I have no problem with him pulling the goalie. There's no question about that. It seemed like it was a bad night all around for the Jets. It starts early with Ehlers leaving the game, taking that high hit from Crosby, and, you know, comes out for that one shift, tries to get it going, back to the dressing room. We don't have an update on Nikolaj Ehlers' health. You would think you'll get one from the Jets either today or certainly before tomorrow's game against the Dallas Stars, tomorrow afternoon's game. But to your point, Ezzy, and I agree, Dave, I want your thoughts on this. It seemed like the Jets were beginning to find their legs in that second period. They definitely controlled the bulk of the play, and then Dominic Simone, like you said, gets that puck just over the, barely over the goal line, depending on the camera angle that you subscribe to, and it's 3-0, and the Jets just deflated at that point, and you sort of felt that the rest of the game was just inevitable at that point, Dave.
Yeah, no, I'm with Ezzy. I think that at a two-goal game, the Jets were still within striking distance, but once that third goal happened, you knew that that game was all but over. I mean, the fact is they just couldn't seem to generate much. I mean, they had their opportunities, but you got to give credit to Murray. He was very good in net, and I thought that the Penguins did what they needed to do. They blocked a lot of shots.
Mm-hmm.
They really clogged up the passing lanes. I thought Pittsburgh played a pretty solid game. You know, they've won 8 in a row, I think, now, and you know, they're pretty much on fire. And the Jets again were just a fraction slower than Pittsburgh.
And I didn't think, you know, this was the worst game I've ever seen from the Jets. I actually thought, you know, Kyle Connor was really strong. I think he ended up with 6 shots on net. I thought Matty Perreault, when he was moved up to the second line, I thought Matty Perreault looked really good. And I actually really liked Brandon Tanev's game. But aside from maybe 3 or 4 players, I mean, how many players were really noticeable? It just wasn't, it wasn't one of the Jets' better games. And again, you could say that it might have to do with the fact, Drew, that they hadn't played in 4 days. I don't know. They're definitely not going to use that as an excuse, but it's just one of those games. But guys, you look at the schedule coming up here, and you know, the Jets have lost 3 of their last 4 games. They've got Dallas coming up. Dallas is only 4 points back, even though they have 2 games in hand on the Stars. But the Jets are going to have to get this going in the other direction, because this is probably their worst slump of the year.
Well, let's talk about the offense, because we know that's dried up. If you take that Edmonton game out of the equation, the Jets have had trouble scoring goals really for the last, you know, week or 10 days or even longer than that. So, I mean, going back, even that win in Vancouver right before the break, it was a 1-0 victory on that Saturday night a couple weeks ago. So what's wrong with the Jets offense? Is this just one of those sort of peaks and valleys that occurs during a season? You don't, you know, the Jets top 6 right now isn't clicking very well. You mentioned Kyle Connor. Well, he's really been struggling for most of the month of December. I would suggest he was struggling, and he, you know, was more noticeable yesterday. But how do the Jets get back on the offensive side of things? How do they, you know, resume what they had been, sort of that offensive powerhouse, especially that we saw in November and early in December?
Yeah, and you know, you look at yesterday's game, and it's easy to say that, you know, the Jets are struggling, especially looking at individual players. And we talked about it last week. I mean, Patrick Laine, going into the game against Minnesota, had 1 assist in his previous 5 games. He scored a goal on the power play in that game. But yesterday, I wouldn't say that was one of his stronger games of the year. And he's certainly in a slump. You mentioned Kyle Connor. I mean, really, as a whole, the Jets have cooled off. I do think that this is just a small blip on the radar, if you want to use that term, because this team has so much high-end skill and so many different weapons. The power play has cooled off, and I also think that, you know, that's kind of a microcosm of what's going on here, right? Jets have one of the best power plays in the league. When they're not getting the power play opportunities, Drew,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they had 1 power play yesterday. I think they've kind of averaged about 2 power plays the last, you know, 6 or 7 games. They're not getting tons of power plays, but I'm not that concerned, because I think that this team has shown that they usually don't let a 2-game losing streak or a 3-game losing streak or losing 3 games in 4 days, they usually don't let that get out of hand.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, when you're looking at certain players and the team as a whole, I mean, Scheifele and Wheeler have been driving the bus all year. I mean, that's why they're going to the All-Star game. They haven't necessarily been at their best the last couple of days, but when they're not producing, you need goals from other players.
Mm-hmm.
You need goals from guys like Brandon Tanev. And we saw Brendan Lemieux on New Year's Eve. And that's the thing. New Year's Eve, you look at that game, Tanev scores, Lemieux gets a couple. I mean, the Jets do have excellent forward depth and D depth. So I'm not worried about it. I just think they ran into a really hot team.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the big question, of course, is going to be the extent of the Nikolaj Ehlers injury. I mean, he didn't look good. He obviously tried to come back later on and couldn't go. You know, we've watched the highlight probably 100 times now today, so looks like the Jets are moving their schedule back an hour. They're going to be practicing at 1 o'clock now instead of 12, so we'll probably get an update, you know, after. I mean, I suspect he won't skate. If he skates, I'd be shocked. So my suspicion is we'll get an update from Coach Maurice, which, of course, will be on illegalcurve.com later this afternoon. But I think, to me, the big question for the Jets offense will be Nikolaj Ehlers. I mean, he's got, I think, 15 goals right now, and he was heating up a little bit. He's a big driver, and I think that, you know, that's going to be a big loss. And will the Jets have the you know, someone to step up and take that role? You know, obviously Kyle Connor probably smoothly will fit into that first line, and maybe that would get him going again, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because, you know, of course, as he just touched on, he's been cold of late, and Kyle Connor's a guy you need to be going. So maybe he needs to be back with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler to really kind of get that mojo rising again.
Yeah, and Dave, there's no doubt that other players are going to have to step up without Buff, and if Ehlers is out long term, or even if he's out for a couple of weeks, other players are going to have to step up, right? So if that's Jacob Trouba or Tyler Myers on the back end, or if that's a guy like Matty Perreault or Brian Little centering that second line, I mean, Mark Scheifele has no points in his last four games. Now, that's extremely rare, and it sounds even weird saying that with how well he was playing before that, but I mean, Scheifele is over a point a game this year.
It's emblematic of the offensive struggles the Jets are going through right now. I mean, you know, it's the entire team, or the drivers of the team for the most part, are not clicking offensively. And they were able to get away with it in that Edmonton game because, like you said, you get, you know, two goals from Brendan Lemieux and you get a goal from Brandon Tanev, and, you know, so that makes up for the games where Connor and where Laine and where Scheifele aren't necessarily going as well as they had. And Wheeler, who, what was that, his first goal in something like 16 games against Edmonton? It has been a long time since he had scored. So the offense is just not there right now for the Winnipeg Jets. So
Scheifele, Drew, had 17 points in his previous eight games before this little, you know, pointless streak. So if anybody's going to get on Mark Scheifele, they're out of their mind. He's been arguably the team's MVP, a Hart Trophy candidate. He's having a little rough stretch here.
It happens to every team. You just hope that it doesn't happen to all of your offensive skill guys at the same time. That's the problem for the Jets, is that it seems like everybody's going through a little bit of the struggles. The third goal, the Dominic Simone goal, was on the ice, the ruling was no goal. Is there conclusive evidence in your mind that that was a goal?
Well, on TV, the angle that we saw, I mean, the puck looked over the line. But it's hard to say when you're looking at it from that aerial view, right? Mm-hmm. What was that camera angle that they used to use where they actually used to rotate 360 degrees, and then you would conclusively be able to see if the puck was over the line? I mean, it looked over, and the Situation Room in Toronto, they know what they're doing, right? And, you know, I don't know if we're going to play Hellebuck's comments here, Drew, but Hellebuck certainly thought last night that it wasn't a goal.
So here's Connor Hellebuck addressing the third goal that was ruled no goal on the ice and then overturned as a result of video review.
I think road hockey might have been getting the best of us a bit. You know, I thought we prepared the right way, so we got to take a good look, take a step back, and continue to build.
How about the third goal? How did you see that goal?
What third goal?
Yeah.
It wasn't in. There's no way. I know they're going to – I need to see the camera angle. And I know they wouldn't call it a goal if it wasn't, but, I mean, one camera angle shows it in, one doesn't. So, from my view, I've been scored on like that, and I was above that. So, I don't see it going in.
And you couple those with how the first two went in, one off your own guy's stick and the other off their guy's shoulder. Does it almost feel like the hockey gods were a little angry with you and your team tonight?
Yeah, you know what? Bounce is not going to go our way every night. I'm hoping that we're getting some bad luck now, so when the playoffs come around, we get the good luck. And that's what I'm going to continue building on.
Connor Hellebuck last night pouring a little bit of water, or I guess questioning if it actually was a goal. The video camera said it was. The Situation Room said it was. It'll be interesting to see, to hear from him today. I don't know if he's going to speak, obviously, but it'll be interesting to see once he sees the replay if his opinion changes at all as to whether or not it's a goal.
Yeah, guys, and we know that Hellebuck's a competitive guy, but you hear that in his voice.
Yeah.
I mean, he hates being scored on.
It's true. The edge for when that was called a goal is certainly apparent in his voice.
The problem is it's the questionable aspect of it, right? Like to me, it's a function of, is there proof that that puck crossed the line? And I saw, Drew, you tweeted about whether there should be something in the puck. Now, the question is cost, right? Because, of course, you lose pucks over the edge.
You're so, running a multi-billion-dollar business.
Well, no, and I agree with you. And the reality is the cost of some of these games being lost, and especially considering, to be honest with you, now that gambling is a factor,
mm-hmm.
and a goal here or there actually makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Again, not that I care. I'm not a gambler. But that is something that you have to consider when you're embracing gambling as a league. Then you can't really have these sort of question marks ahead of around things like this. But more to the point, I mean, I don't really care about the gambling aspect of it. It's more a function of you want to make sure that the call is being made accurately on the ice. To me, it's a function of how difficult, like you said, would it be to have a
microchip.
Some sort of microchip in that puck that goes in. And because the reality is, you're right. So you lose. How many pucks do you think are lost in a game?
Well, the ones that are lost, and then there's the ones that they just take out of play. But I mean, I don't know. I'm sure.
No, but what I'm saying is, like if you think about it, there's two or three, maybe up to five pucks a game. So you're losing, it costs you a little bit of extra money.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you're getting these calls right, and you're not making big mistakes. And to me, that's the biggest, most important thing you can do.
There's in 2019, the fact that there's not a microchip in the puck and a microchip in the football to determine if it crosses the goal line in the NFL is insane to me.
Drew, the
last
angle,
word, Ezzy.
The angle I was thinking about, it's called the parallax angle. That's the angle that shows you from an aerial view. It kind of shows you in a better way, a different angle, that whether or not the puck crosses the line or not.
Alrighty. Well, when we come back on
when
we come back on the Illegal Curve Geometry Show, anyways, when we come back, we'll actually talk about the upcoming NHL trade deadline. It's 7 or so weeks away. What do the Jets need to do to address their team ahead of the trade deadline? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Dump in by Bufflin. Turned aside, Eaters after it, takes it away from Hartnell, drops it off, score! Ehlers steals it from Hartnell, gets it to Paul Stastny, and Paul Stastny has his first goal as a Winnipeg Jet.
Paul Stastny going to have a better debut in a Jets jersey than he's had so far. Crowd loves it.
That was from last season, Paul Stastny making his debut in Winnipeg against the Nashville Predators, if you remember that. It was a back-and-forth, I believe, a 6-5 victory for the Predators over the Jets. Stastny scoring in his debut as a member of the Jets. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning here on TSN 1290, this segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Stastny's first game, Drew, we were talking about this last Saturday when we were talking about our top Jets memories of 2018. Ryan Hartman
scored
the winning goal in that game. That was his first game, or one of his first games as a member of the Predators.
It was his first game, yeah.
I know we're going to get into this, but what an acquisition. I mean, the way Stastny played in that series against Nashville, I mean, it was worth giving up a first-round pick and Eric Foley almost just for that series alone.
Well, do the Jets get past the Predators in the second round without Paul Stastny? I'm not sure.
I think he was the Jets' best forward in that series.
He certainly was. He was an incredible trade deadline acquisition. Obviously, the Jets weren't able to get over the hump and defeat the Vegas Golden Knights in the Western Conference Final. But to get to that point, Stastny played a key role there. Monday will be 7 weeks until the NHL trade deadline. Monday, February 25th is when the deadline is. And as it happens every year, as the calendar rolls over, this is where our focus begins to shift to that trade deadline, as it's the next big milestone on the NHL calendar. So my question for you guys on this Saturday morning is, what position? Last year, obviously, was center when the Jets went out and got Paul Stastny, and to a bit of a lesser degree, it was defense when they got Joe Morrow from the Montreal Canadiens. What positions does Kevin Cheveldayoff need to address, does he need to upgrade upon as the Jets and as the trade deadline becomes closer and closer?
Before I answer that, Drew, I was watching the Golden Knights-Ducks game last night, and Stastny and Pacioretty look really good playing on that second line. So I know Stastny missed the first, I think, 30 games of the season, but he's looking really good in a Golden Knights jersey, and I imagine the Jets still would love to have him in a Jets jersey. But You know, it's a really good question, and I know we're going to talk about Mike McIntyre's article in the Free Press yesterday, and, you know, he mentioned some players, including Eric Staal and Jake Muzzin guys, but, you know, it's pretty obvious that it's center and the left side D, right, Dave? I mean, the Jets are very strong on the right side, you know, even without Bufflin in the lineup. And, you know, people keep forgetting Tucker Poolman. It's been a really tough year for Tucker Poolman, because this was really going to be a year, I think, where he took the next step in his game, whether that was playing big minutes with the Moose, Dave, or that was being the Jets' seventh defenseman. But, you know, Poolman's been out for quite some time now. What, 2 months now, I believe,
Yeah,
Dave?
Since late November.
So
concussion.
So he's been out for a month and a half, 2 months. And I really believe that if Poolman was healthy, he'd be the guy that was called up as opposed to Sammy Niku, just because, you know, makes sense. He's a natural right-side defenseman. And, you know, sure, Niku can play on the right side and, you know, vice versa. Poolman can play on the left side. But anyways, getting back to, you know, the left side D and the center position, I think it's pretty clear, you know, that when the Jets acquired Paul Stastny, the upgrade over Brian Little, it was noticeable. More offense, you know, better in the face-off circle and all of that. So I do believe that getting a second-line center, bringing in a second-line center prior to the trade deadline, is going to push the Jets over the edge like it did last year. Now the question becomes, well, who's that center going to be? When you talk about a guy like Eric Staal, yes, you know, he scored the 41 goals, I believe, last year. He's an excellent player. When you're talking about a guy like Brock Nelson, who you tweeted about earlier this week, pending UFA.
Plays for the Islanders, pretty consistent 20-goal scorer with the Islanders over the last 5 years.
Right.
On pace for his career high in goals with, I believe he's on pace for over 25 goals this season with the Islanders.
Right. And so, again, another good player, and, you know, another guy that's been mentioned is Kevin Hayes. Now, all three of these players, Nelson, Staal, Kevin Hayes, all really good players.
Mike McIntyre in that article also mentions Matt Duchene of the Ottawa Senators.
Right, and, you know, that's a different scenario because maybe not. I mean,
it's pure rental.
It's a pure rental, but I guess, I mean, there's the off-ice stuff, but I would think that Eric Staal, Kevin Hayes, Brock Nelson, for me, are more realistic than Matt Duchene. That's just me personally. But back to your original question, center, left side D, is that what the Jets need to improve prior to the trade deadline? I mean, prior to this little, you know, three losses in four game, you know, stretch here, Drew, you could probably argue, and I argued this last year prior to the trade deadline. I remember this. I said that the Jets really didn't have to do much. And they went out and they acquired Stastny, and they ended up going to the Western Conference Final. And you could argue that without Stastny, Dave, the Jets wouldn't have gone to the Western Conference Final. Maybe they beat Minnesota.
I think they beat Minnesota regardless.
But probably they don't get past Nashville.
Well, I think you beat Minnesota regardless because Ryan Suter's out of the Wild lineup last season for the playoffs. And the Wild just weren't as good as the Jets and come playoff time last season. Do they get past the Predators? I don't know. Stastny certainly helped significantly in that series. Dave, what about your thoughts on this? I mean, is it center? You know, if there's a winger that, you know, makes more, I'm not going to say financial sense, but the cost to acquire makes more sense than, say, a centerman, is that something the Jets could still consider or should still consider?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, especially the key to any NHL run deep in the playoffs is having your depth. And, you know, we look at the guys like Mason Appleton and Brendan Lemieux and Nick Batan, and those guys could be called upon, but are they going to be able to step up and get to that next level that the NHL playoffs are going to demand, that you're going to need, you know, more scoring, not just from Nick Ehlers and Kyle Connor, but from all players
across
the board.
Remember, Brandon Tanev opened the scoring in the playoffs last season against the Predators in game one in Nashville.
I thought, wasn't it Joe Morrow who scored the first goal?
I thought it was
Minnesota?
Tanev, but it could be.
I don't know. I'm saying it's Minnesota.
Oh, against Minnesota.
Yeah.
The first goal at home against Minnesota, wasn't it Laine?
I don't remember.
The Jets were down 1-0 into the third period.
It doesn't matter. The point I'm making is that you're going to need that depth. So, you know, if you can get, I mean, it's really about price, right? You have two factors for general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff. You have the here and now, which obviously is going for a Stanley Cup, but you also have the long-term viability of your franchise. So you got to be careful. Obviously, you can't mortgage the future too significantly.
Well, let me stop you right there.
Okay.
Does that mean the Jets cannot afford to trade another first-round pick at the trade deadline this season? They traded a first rounder last year to St. Louis. Can they afford to trade a first rounder again this year to acquire whomever at the deadline?
Well, I think they can afford to trade a first round pick, and I think they can afford to trade a first round pick for several reasons. First off, the Jets have drafted extremely well. not just in the first round or in the second round. I mean, we could go over all of the late round steals the Jets have. Hellebuck, Nikku, Appleton, all of these guys, right? But I think more so, Drew, because if they... The question depends on, obviously, what they get in return and if that return pays immediate dividends, right? So a guy like Jake Muzzin, to me, I think I would be more willing to give up a first-round pick and a prospect to get a guy like Jake Muzzin. This is a guy that's won a Stanley Cup. So he won one Stanley Cup or two Stanley Cups? I only think one. But he's a guy that I think immediately makes them better on the left side and a guy that other players don't want to play against. Now, I don't think they're horrible on the left side. And, guys, by the way, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Sammy Nikku in the lineup sooner rather than later. I'm not saying it's going to be tomorrow, but wouldn't be surprised if it's tomorrow. We'll see. But the point is, if you're going to acquire, let's say, Brock Nelson, Eric Staal, well, where are you moving Brian Little? Are you moving him to the wing? Are you moving him to the third line? Because Adam Lowry right now is your third line center on that line. So I think it all depends what you're getting back. And we can look back on this after the season's over, and if the Jets end up giving up a first-round pick for a left-side defenseman like a Muzzin or a Bomeister, or if they bring in a Eric Staal or a Matt Duchene and they end up winning the Cup, we'll say, yeah, they gave up their first-round pick. And it is going to be a late first-round pick. I mean, we know that it's not going to be anything in the top 15, that's for sure.
You wouldn't think so, given... Sorry, Dave, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we put the question, or you put the question on to Twitter, and we've got a couple of responses. World's Greatest Hockey tweeting said left-handed defenseman Jake Muzzin.
Okay.
And then Kurt Spielman says Flyers are done, we'll trade Simmons for Patan and a mid-round pick.
Well, there you go.
And so let me tell you, I would take Wayne Simmons on any team because he is unbelievable.
Wayne Simmons is a very good player. He will be the Flyers are definitely a seller as you approach the trade deadline.
Muzzin wasn't on the 2012 Cup team.
But he's got the one cup after that.
2014.
14, yeah. Exactly. So we want to hear from you. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. Two-part question. One, what do the Jets need to upgrade before the trade deadline? What position? And two, realistically, who do you think the Jets should target? We heard, as Dave mentioned, from a couple different people saying one guy said Jake Muzzin, left-hand defense. One guy said Wayne Simmons. We want to hear from you. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve, and we'll keep reading them on air throughout the show this Saturday morning.
Just want to get one more player in there. His name has been bandied about in regards to maybe the Leafs acquiring him. Jacob Slavin.
From the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, he's a left-shot defenseman. He's a guy that I think has five more years left on his contract.
Yeah.
But that's a guy I'd trade for.
Yeah, but that's going to be more than a first-round pick to acquire him. That's a bigger deal at that point in time because they're looking for – the Hurricanes in that instance are looking for a top-six forward to step into their lineup if they're dishing out Jacob Slavin at that point. In any event, like I said, just over 7 weeks until the NHL trade deadline. We want to hear from you. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. When we come back, Trevor Kidd, TSN 1290 Jets analyst, is going to join us to talk more about the Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Question of the day, of course, we want to hear from you. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. Do the Jets need to upgrade before the trade deadline? If so, what position do they need to upgrade, and who do you think they should realistically target? Couple more comments coming in. Kevin the Garbage Man, this one's funny, says he would trade a first-round pick for Gritty. Gritty would push us over the top, so that's pretty funny. And then Calvin Moore says the Jets should go out and get Matt Zuccarello from the New York Rangers.
He's been mentioned forever with the Jets.
He's been tied to the Jets for a while for whatever reason. Another guy, the Rangers, of course, obviously also in a rebuild, so a couple other names to consider. I'm not sure that a first-round pick will be enough to get Gritty, but we'll see on that side of things.
Yeah, Zuccarello, of course, is the Norwegian Gretzky.
The Norwegian Gretzky, yes, yep. Exactly. Anyways, it'll be an interesting thing to keep an eye on. Keep your comments coming. We will read them on air throughout the show at Illegal Curve.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program our good friend Trevor Kidd. You know Trevor, of course, with his work here on TSN 1290. Trevor, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, boys. I can't believe you're... couldn't resist, hey, and getting into the trade deadline talk early as the calendar flips. We're even hearing this last night during our post-game show. It's amazing how Jet fans are just so passionate and already, I mean, the trade deadline is at the end of February. We're 2 months away, and everybody's wanting to make a move here.
Well, you know what? It's, it provides good fodder for talk radio, as as you well know there, Trev. You know,
all good.
Last night's performance, sort of a bizarre game. You have the Penguins scoring, you know, three goals, and then, of course, the empty netter. None of the three I would describe as highlight reel goals. The first one off of Wheeler's stick on the nice deflection by the captain. The second one off Matt Cullen's shoulder, and then the third one by Dominic Simone. Is that one of those games that you think the Jets sort of just chalk up to a fair bit of bad luck? You know, Mike McIntyre, I think, wrote about it and addressed it in his post-game comments with the players, right. You know, puck luck just not being on the Jets' side last night?
Yeah, I agree. It wasn't on their side, but you know, I don't think the Winnipeg Jets put themselves in a position to. It was a different type of game. You look at the first period, and I didn't think the Jets came out with the start that they wanted. When you talk about the pace and speed that they need to play the game at, and it, to me, it's highly demanding that they need to do that for a 60-minute period. And you look at the last four or five games or so, to me that's been, when you talk a little bit about a bump in the road, to me it's them getting off to good starts and playing 60-minute games. And you know, Maurice talks about, before you can even start talking about structure, that the Winnipeg Jets need to bring their pace and their speed. So when you look at last night, you know, they battle the first period. They don't give up a ton in regards to opportunities until you get towards the end of that first period. Whereas you just mentioned, they score, you know, Wheeler deflects one, unfortunately, glove side on Hellebuck. And then the second goal that goes off the visor or shoulder, whatever you want to call it, top corner on Hellebuck. But in that first period last night, the Winnipeg Jets out-hit the Pittsburgh Penguins 25-11. You first look at that, you'd go, geez, really physical first period. The Winnipeg Jets are doing a lot of good things in that department. But when the hits, to me, are that lopsided, it just simply means you're not playing with the puck. And the possession in the first period, the Penguins owned it. The second period, third period for the Winnipeg Jets last night was better. They played with the puck more. They had a good portion of that second period that had some opportunities on Murray, but and you heard afterwards Matt Murray talking about it, a few of the other Winnipeg Jet guys talking about it. It just seemed that they just couldn't get any hectic type play around the blue paint on Murray. He was to me, the saves that he had to make last night, a lot were from the perimeter, a lot were from the high top of the circle areas, a lot were just simply no traffic in front of the net. So although the Winnipeg Jets, I thought, got their skating legs, you know, back in the pace that they want to play the game and were better in regards to possession and some opportunities to net, they just didn't create enough dangerous opportunities to allow themselves to really get back into that hockey game. And then that third goal that you mentioned, to me, that was the turning point. Controversial type goal. When I say controversial, obviously went to a replay, and the replay showed that it was clearly across the line. But that third goal last night was killer in the third period late. I think it was about 5 minutes left in the second, excuse me. So different type of game. I agree with you. The goals were odd, but you talk about the Winnipeg Jets and how they played in general. It just wasn't one of their best games.
You know, Trev, in your answer, you mentioned Connor Hellebuck, and you mentioned that third goal that looked like he made the save originally, and then the call was overturned. And I'm sure you and Kevin O talked about this on the postgame show last night. What did you make of Hellebuck's comments? We talked about it during the first segment. I mean, Hellebuck almost seemed like he was in denial that they actually overturned the call, and it was a good goal. You know, as a former goaltender and as someone that follows the team and analyzes the team, is that something that you want to see out of your number one goaltender, even though you lose the game? I mean, he was ticked off.
I love his post-game interviews. I love how the way he holds himself accountable, whether he lets a bad goal in or just a play or a game that he doesn't like. He doesn't point fingers at anybody. He doesn't look at other areas to lay blame. He holds himself accountable, and I think sometimes we forget how young Connor Hellebuck is in regards to being a number one netminder and playing and dealing with media and the market and the microscope in playing in Canada. I mean, look around the other Canadian markets, generally speaking, in regards to netminders, and you're talking about guys that are well into their 30s. And here's Connor Hellebuck that is just in his mid-20s, learning the ropes as we go. So I like his demeanor. I like how he approaches the game. I like the steps that he's made both on the ice, but to me, the mentality part of playing the position off the ice, I think he's growing equally as he is, you know, the stuff that we've seen over the last couple of years on the ice as well.
You know, Trev, the talk a lot of talk right now is about the drying up of the offense. And if you look at that Jets second line, Brian Little hasn't scored in 11 games. Kyle Connor hasn't scored in 10 games. Patrick Laine has 3 goals in his last 10, but only 1 in his last 8. What do you see in that second line that just doesn't seem to be clicking?
Well, you know, geez. You know, Connor lost, you know, for example, and I think that second line is on the cusp of breaking out of what you just talked about. Kyle Connor, if you look at last night, I thought he was arguably at least up front, was the Winnipeg Jets' best player. Had some opportunities, used his speed in that second period to generate some chances. Had a real all-alone chance on the backhand in front of Murray that just couldn't get enough meat on it, I guess, to make it a challenging type save for Murray. But generating the chances, you go to Little and go to that Calgary game there, and Little probably had 3 or 4 unbelievable chances on Riddick that he had to do the splits on and somehow got a piece of and didn't see, but was still there. So to me, those two guys in particular have created opportunities. They just haven't found the back of the net yet. And so for me, if I'm Coach Maurice, I'm looking at that and going, you know, just a matter of time. To me, the chances, the opportunities that they've created are in the good areas or in the tough areas of the ice. They're not creating, when I say creating opportunities, you look at the game last night, a lot of the stuff was from the perimeter. To me, when you look at Brian Little and Connor and microscope it to the last 5 or 6 games, they have been in those tough areas. They just haven't found one to pop on them. Patrick Laine, you know, to me, is battling a little bit with the 5-on-5 play, and I think part of that and how that line plays has been the old school stuff and playing the 200-foot game and the turnovers. To me, they're chasing it a lot of the times in the neutral zone because they don't have the puck, and that you know, you talk about looking forward and making decisions and moves and whatnot. You know, this year 5-on-5 play, 5-on-5 goals is up big time. So playing 5-on-5, scoring 5-on-5 is huge in this new NHL. Yes, the Winnipeg Jets have an unbelievable power play, and that's been good, although you can say that's dried up a little bit here of late. Just to me, with the second line, it's they just need to simply play with the puck a little bit more, if I'm going to generally speak, and a lot of it has to do with how they're getting the puck out of the defensive zone and through the neutral zone, still holding on to it and not turning it over and chasing the game from that point.
Trevor Kidd is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Trevor, of course, as a TSN Jets analyst. Trevor, to your point about the second line and sort of their struggles at 5-on-5 and their struggles to play consistently, is that a sign to you that maybe the line needs to change? Or going back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the interview about the trade deadline, does that mean to you that's an area the Jets need to look at upgrading?
Well, you know, does it need to change? I mean, you've seen Ehlers and Connor flip quite often on that line. To me, there's so much when you talk about the lines. I think before you get into talking about the second line, I think you also need to look at the third line and how much admiration Coach Maurice has for that line, in particular Adam Lowry and what he does for the group. I mean, the first thing that Coach Maurice talks about when Adam Lowry steps back into the lineup was how much we missed him and how much him and how he manages his bench and how he rolls out his lines is centered around Adam Lowry, not Shifley, not Little. So that line shuts down the opposition's best on most nights, especially when you're on the road, to have the ability to roll out that line. And when you look at the last couple, 3 games in particular, a lot of the momentum changes in the game have come from that third line and having great offensive zone shifts, changing the course of the game, changing the momentum of the game. So you know, it's tough to look at the second line and say how we're going to move this around, because there's so much, again, admiration for that third line and what they do for the hockey club. It is a tough thing to look at, because I do like Brian Little's game. I do like how he plays. I think he's when that line doesn't work, he is everybody wants to put the blame at his feet. And to me, there's three guys on that line, and a line is that. And you need all participating and contributing in regards to all facets of the game. And talking about from the breakout, doing the right things from a center position, the wings holding their ground, moving through the neutral zone, and then how you work the offensive zone. And whether that be generating offensive chances off the rush, or that second wave attack and board battles, working the puck behind the goal line and getting it out into the danger areas for shot opportunities. And to me, that's where that line has not broken down, but has struggled here of late, is, again, the big picture, the 200-foot game.
Trev, one final question for you here. Tonight, it's the gold medal game between the United States and Finland at the 2019 World Juniors. You won two gold medals with Team Canada at the World Juniors, including 91 in Saskatchewan, the famous John Slaney goal. You know, I wanted to ask you about Mikey DiPietro. I mean, his numbers were incredible. I think his save percentage was .952 in four games for Team Canada. But I wanted to specifically ask you about after the game, when the Finnish team was celebrating, and Jukka-Pekka Luukkonen, the Finnish goaltender, Buffalo Sabres draft pick, went over to Mikey DiPietro and gave him a little tap on the pads, tap on the helmet. What was your reaction to that? Because for me, that was one of the greatest displays of sportsmanship I've seen in international hockey in a long time.
Yeah, no doubt. I agree with you. I thought that was a real cool thing for the Finnish netminder to do. That was a heck of a game in regards to the battles. Both goaltenders were playing lights-out type stuff, and a little bit unfortunate. You battle like that, you compete like that, and then you see a couple goals go in late. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The Finnish netminder was obviously pumped, but to check your emotions at that moment and to skate down, and I agree with you, show a huge amount of sportsmanship is something that you don't see too often in the international game. So it, no, I agree with you. It was a really cool moment. DiPietro, you know, and playing, not easy to do, right? Playing in an NHL building, having that type of microscope on you, that type of pressure on you, and not just DiPietro, but the whole group there of Canadians and Team Canada, not easy to do. And I thought DiPietro really showed himself well in that game, making some huge saves at different points in the game. But, you know, hockey can be cruel at times and a little bit unfortunate. And, hey, I've lived, you know, that type of situation on a few occasions where, geez, it doesn't matter what you do, a bad bounce here, a little deflection there, and it just seems to find its way in the back of the net. Unfortunately, it happened in such a huge stage for Team Canada and DiPietro, but really served himself well. And again, to you know, wrap it up, that was a great moment there by the Finnish netminder.
Well, Trevor Kidd is a TSN Jets analyst. Trevor, appreciate your time on this Saturday morning. Thanks so much for joining us, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Trevor. When we come back, we talk about tomorrow afternoon's Jets-Stars game. The Stars are on fire. We talk about the Jets' forward lines, potentially without Nikolaj Ehlers. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Stars still on the attack. It's Sagan. His shot. Up in front, Spets a stop, rebound, score! Jamie Benn, 3-1 Stars! Top unit, Klingberg to the left side, Sagan in front, score! Jamie Benn, set up perfectly by Sagan, it's 4-1!
It's a three power play goal night for the guys
in victory green.
From the Jets' second game of the season back in Dallas, it wasn't a good one. The Stars' power play blew the Jets out of the water. The Jets look for revenge tomorrow afternoon as the Dallas Stars make their first visit of the season to Winnipeg. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your door, visit shopbernsteins.com. So tomorrow afternoon, the Jets and the Dallas Stars, all of a sudden a juggernaut Dallas Stars team playing some very good hockey since Jim Leite went a little nutty on Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn. Jamie Benn not likely to be in the lineup, presumably. He missed the game against the Washington Capitals last night, a game that the Stars won by a 2-1 margin. I would expect him not to play for the Stars again after he suffered a hit against the New Jersey Devils on Wednesday night. But all of a sudden, the Dallas Stars, they are only 4 points behind the Winnipeg Jets, albeit the Jets have two games in hand, and the Stars hold down third spot in the Central Division, so it won't be an easy matchup for the Jets tomorrow night against the Stars.
Yeah, 4-0-1 in their last five, right?
Yeah.
And a huge win yesterday over the Capitals. I mean, the Capitals and Penguins have really started to separate themselves in the Metro Division, and you know, I thought it was interesting that Tyler Seguin got the two goals because of all the hoopla and all that, and Jamie Benn as well has stepped up his game, guys. But I mean, when you look at this team, the focus has been on Benn and Seguin because of Jim Leite's comments. But I mean, this is a good team, and people forget, you know, John Klingberg is a guy who missed a lot of time, and Klingberg was leading the Stars in points amongst defensemen even a month or two after he was still out of the lineup. And Miro Heiskanen is a guy that I talked about last week, Drew, when you were away, as a guy who I think should be given Calder Trophy consideration. And it's not just points-wise, because his points don't necessarily jump out at you. It's the minutes he's playing.
23 minutes a game is what he's averaging as a rookie defenseman on the back end.
Right, in the Central Division, on a team that's third in the Central. So Heiskanen is a guy who obviously has been a top prospect in their system since he was drafted in 2017. But this is a guy who's having an impact now. And, you know, you look at Alex Radulov, he's having another good year, point-per-game player. He obviously missed some time as well. But Jason Spezza, I think, has started to turn up his game. And Spezza's playing on the wing now. I think that's an interesting development. You're used to seeing Jason Spezza as your second-line center, and he has played at times at center as well. But this is a deeper team in previous years. And there were some interesting comments from Jim Montgomery a couple days ago. Sean Shapiro mentioned them. He was talking about Valeri Nichushkin. Valeri Nichushkin has struggled big time since returning from the KHL. I think he's only got one goal.
He doesn't even have one. So he's still looking for his goals.
There you go. So he
seven assists in 33 games played for the Dallas Stars.
I thought he had one goal, but maybe that's because Olli Maatta scored his first goal of the game last night.
You would expect that he would have a goal by now just by default of playing with the guys he's been playing with.
Right, so this is a guy that, if you remember, in his rookie year, he scored 14 goals, and then he went over to the KHL, and you know, they were hoping that he'd be kind of that second-line winger for them. But
he probably thought he'd be like Radulov coming back from the KHL.
Right, so, I mean, it's clear that the Stars are top-heavy again, but for me, guys, what's the biggest difference is between this team and last year's team is they're better defensively. And Anton Khudobin, I think, has been one of the most underrated acquisitions. Ben Bishop has been solid, but Khudobin has been very solid as well.
Yeah, well, you know, they needed a quality backup netminder for Ben Bishop, because sometimes Bishop, as he's done throughout his career, has gone through, you know, peaks and valleys and struggles. And when you can go to a guy like Khudobin, who you know can take the ball and run with it for a short period of time while Ben Bishop works through his struggles, it's a nice reassuring factor for the Dallas Stars. Dave, from the Jets' perspective ahead of tomorrow night's game against the Stars, how do you see the forward line shaking out for the Jets if Nikolaj Ehlers is unable to play? We know, of course, he left the game very early against the Penguins yesterday. No update on his health. That probably won't come until later this afternoon when the Jets practice Jets start practice around 1, around 2 o'clock. By 2 o'clock, we should know what the result is
you
for Nikolaj
Ehlers.
You
should be on illegalcurve.com hitting refresh.
Just constantly hitting refresh.
Hit refresh.
From about 1:30 all the way until 2
pretty
o'clock.
Much actually go all day.
All day. You can just hit refresh there. So how do you think the Jets should assemble their forward lines tomorrow on the assumption that Nikolaj Ehlers won't be in the Jets lineup?
Well, I mean, you got to think that Kyle Connor is going to – they want to get Kyle Connor going. As I talked about with Trevor Kidd in that last segment, he hasn't scored in 10 games. So you got to get him going. So you put him up with Shifley Wheeler. You've maybe put Matty Perreault, who's, you know, the, so versatile. You put him with Little and Line A. Maybe get that line going. And then, in my mind, you put Andrew Kopp back with Lowry and Tanev. And then you bring in either Nick Petan or Mason Appleton, likely Mason Appleton because he was running him before, into the lineup onto that fourth line. And you have a young fourth line. I don't mind that. You know, you got to give them a little bit of responsibility. You shelter them a bit. But you know what? It's better to do it now in games. You've built up enough of a cushion. And the reality is, especially a player like Jack Rozovic, who's generally pretty responsible, Mason Appleton, pretty responsible. So to me, that line is usually going to be pretty good. And I think, you know, if depending on how you're going to construct your lineup for the playoffs, you want to be able to trust these lines. And that, to me, is right now Maurice is a little bit of his downfall. Is he's going way too hard on his horses. And he's we've seen that with him. And he, you know, Mark Scheifele played 24 minutes last game. I think Kyle Connor played 21 minutes. Blake Wheeler played 20 minutes. And so, to me, you increase the time for guys like Jack Rozovic, I think played about 7 minutes, and Brendan Lemieux and Mason Appleton. First of all, because it's important to get them NHL experience in games in the regular season where I don't think it matters as significantly, because I think if you're the Jets, you've already built that cushion that you need to get you to the playoffs. I'm not saying that they're in, obviously, but I think
they're in a good standing.
They're in a good position, and I think you need to be able to rely on these players. So I think, you know, instill trust in them now, and then you can worry about them later, because I just think if you have to go to them when you're desperate, that's going to be a problem when you haven't shown the confidence in them all year long.
Yeah, Dave, and we talked about the Stars aren't a very good offensive team. I think they've scored the sixth fewest goals in the NHL, but they're also one of the better defensive teams in the league. I think they've allowed the fourth fewest.
They've given in the West, in terms of Western Conference, they've given up the second fewest goals in the Western Conference, right, with 111.
Right.
And goals for 115, so that puts them, you know, sort of middle of the pack in the Western Conference.
Right, and Anton Khudobin started last night, so I would expect it to be Ben Bishop. We've got Mike Hajka coming up, so we'll ask Mike Hajka. He might not know, but Ben Bishop still does get the majority of the starts. But whether it's Bishop or Khudobin, both have played excellently. We talked about that. And now that Klingberg is back in the lineup, I mentioned Klingberg. He's been back in the lineup now for about 3 weeks. I mean, they can move the puck out of their zone. Mm-hmm. Klingberg, Heiskanen, I mean, these guys can move the puck. Esa Lindell, I think, has started to play his best hockey of his career, still a very young defenseman. But, I mean, if you can shut down the big boys, Seguin, Ben, Radulov, well, I mean, it's...
And without Ben likely being in the lineup.
Sure, and especially without Ben being in the lineup, even though there is, you know, the outside chance that he is. I mean, you're going to do yourself a lot of favors by shutting down those big boys, because they still are top-heavy. And to Dave's point, I mean, Connor played really well last night. I think, you know, Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, they're not happy with their lack of offensive production. So I'm expecting a big game out of the Jets, but it's not going to be easy, because this Dallas team has Winnipeg in their sights. They know that's the team that they're striving to pass, right? Nashville and Winnipeg. So, you know, I expect this to be a pretty competitive game tomorrow.
It's a proverbial 4-point game. If the Jets win, then they are 6 points up on the Dallas Stars with two games still in hand.
Yep.
All of a sudden, if the Stars win, well, they're only 2 points back. They're feeling good about themselves. They've beaten the Jets. That would be the second win against the Jets this season. So they would be. Any divisional game is particularly important, and the Jets want to start feeling good about themselves after going through the struggles that they've been going through.
Right, and other teams have caught up, right? The Jets have lost 3 of their last 4 games, and Dallas has won 4 of their last 5, and they've caught up a little bit.
It should be a good contest tomorrow afternoon, a 4 o'clock puck drop at Bell MTS Place, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN 1290 and watch on TSN 3. When we come back, Mike Hajka covers the Dallas Stars. He joins us to talk more about the Jets' opponent tomorrow afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Mike Hajka. Mike is the senior staff writer for DallasStars.com. Mike, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning to you guys.
Our pleasure, Mike, having you on. Thanks so much for joining us. You know, Mike, it's been about, what is it, about a week now since Jim Leitz's controversial comments regarding Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn, and it seems to have, you know, lit a fire under them, at least on ice. The Stars playing some good hockey right now, winners of four of their last five, including a big victory last night against the Washington Capitals. The Stars moved into third spot in the Central Division. Do you think that the comments have maybe provided a bit of motivation for the guys on ice?
It's really hard to say. I mean, Jim's timing, and I don't know if he planned it or not, but you know, they were coming home for an extended stretch of home games, and they've been so much better at home than they've been on the road, so that's fortuitous. But I wrote something today that basically it's not just Jim Leitz, it's everyone in the organization is really trying to raise the bar, and you know, they need to. They're at a point where, you know, they've created a expectation of, you know, the way the ages of all these players are coming together and the way that the advancement of their careers is coming together, that they need to be a playoff team right now. And you know, that's not saying they're going to win the Stanley Cup. They just need to be a playoff team. And so when they started to slip out of that a couple of weeks ago, I really do think it made them, I don't want to say panic, but, you know, put their antenna up that, hey, we did this last year. We went on an 0-7 run, and that wrecked the whole season, and we can't have that. We can't have those types of lapses. We need to be, you know, sharp mentally all the time. And it's interesting that, you know, they won the game against the defending Stanley Cup champions last night, 2-1 in overtime, and Jim Montgomery was disappointed because they started the game really well, and then they went right into one of their little lulls, and Washington dominated the game, and Anton Khudobin basically saved it just the same way that he saved the game in Nashville, just the same way that Ben Bishop, who struggled in the first two periods against New Jersey the other night, came back and was fantastic in the third period. I mean, goaltending has been saving and covering a lot of the mistakes. And so instead of saying, hey, we're getting better, and hey, you know, we're 4-0-1 and we're moving up, Jim Montgomery took his postgame presser last night and kind of ripped the players and said, this is an inconsistent team, and they've been an inconsistent team for the past 3 years, which was pretty strong. So, it's not just Jim Leitz. I think, you know, they're all trying to raise the bar together, and that's just where they are right now.
Mike, going back to the goaltending, Anton Khudobin played yesterday. Do you expect it to be Ben Bishop tomorrow? Is there a chance that we could see Khudobin again? And how important, maybe, you know, it's an obvious question, but with all of the difficulties the Stars have had over the years with goaltending, how important is it to have two goaltenders performing at such a high level? Because not only is Ben Bishop having a nice bounce back year, Anton Khudobin has been arguably the best backup goaltender in the entire league.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the big key, and Ben hates when we talk about this, but it's a reality. He has had injury issues. He had some situations earlier this year. And so to have a guy that you could go to for 2, 3, 4, 8 games in a row and feel pretty good about it, that I think is huge for Anton Khudobin. The other interesting part is his personality is such that when he goes in there, he feels he's going to play well. And, you know, that's big for the team because now you're not looking over your shoulder. And I think that's what they had at times in the past, is that the entire team was looking over its shoulder at the goaltending, and then that created some problems for them in not having the trust to go forward and try and skate and try and score. So, to your point, one, Khudobin could play tomorrow. I don't know if he will. We'll see on that. But their goaltending choices have been all over the place. Jim Montgomery says he coaches with his gut a lot. He trusts Jeff Rees a lot in his, you know, assessment of the situation. My guess would be it's Ben Bishop again, but it definitely could be Khudobin. But yes, having these two goalies in the situation that they're in is massive because the Stars haven't had that situation. Even when Kari Lehtinen was really good, he would mix in that game where he just gave up the wrong goal at the wrong time. And that's what I think we've all been talking about in the third periods here, because I think they've been tied going to the third periods for like 5 out of the last 6 games. And earlier in the year, they were giving up the bad goal, but right now they're making huge stops to keep them in a 1-1 game or a 2-2 game, and then giving them, you know, giving the offensive players the opportunity to win the game in the third period. It's the old, you know, Grant Fuhr thing make the right save at the right time, and that's what they hadn't done before this season.
You know, Mike, a few days ago the NHL announced that the 2020 Winter Classic is going to be held at the Cotton Bowl, which I believe seats around 80,000 for hockey. I think 92,000, I think he said, is capacity. But I think Gary Bettman said for hockey about 80,000. What's that going to mean for hockey in the region?
Well, a lot of it's going to depend on, you know, where the team is. Like, if you look at what the sales and marketing staff has done for this team, the building's full most nights. And so all of that has been fantastic. But if you don't win and you don't get into the playoffs and you don't capitalize on that fan interest, then it can really kind of backfire. So what this could do is it could really unite the Southwest. You know, Brad Alberts, who's a team president who had a lot to do with getting this game into Dallas, has said they're going to go to Houston, they're going to go to San Antonio, they're going to go to Austin and Oklahoma City and Louisiana and try to get people to make this a bucket list, you know, three-day trip to Dallas to see an outdoor hockey game, because these opportunities don't come along much in Texas or any place in the South in the United States. So that opportunity to, one, spread their brand, spread their mark out into the community is going to be huge. But to do that, I believe they have to be a good team. They have to be a winning team. I mean, if it's just a one-off, hey, we've got a great game here, even if they win or they play well, I'm not sure that that is going to make the impact that they would like it to make. But if they start winning and this provides a spotlight for them as a winning franchise and organization, it can be massive. I mean, we saw back in the, you know, 99, 2000 that they were, you know, as popular as any team outside the Cowboys. You know, the Mavericks have been big down here. The Texas Rangers have been big. And then if you look at San Antonio Spurs, the Houston Astros, I mean, there's some really good sports teams in this area. And if the Stars can capitalize on the spotlight and show everybody how good they are, then it really could be a big deal.
Along the same lines, Mike, who do you think their opponents should be?
That's a good question. I mean, I keep hearing Nashville. I think that would be kind of fun. Tampa Bay, I think, would be a really good national team who knows, might be coming off a Stanley Cup at the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do think it should be probably somebody from the South to highlight that, and the fact that hockey in the South has, you know, been here for a while. I mean, you know, Stars celebrated their 25th year last year in Dallas. So there's a lot, you know, in the South that maybe people don't see as much. So it would be nice to have something like that. Like I said, Nashville, Tampa Bay, those would be, you know, ideal opponents if you ask me.
Mike, what about Chicago? They haven't really been in that many outdoor games.
Mike Hyka is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike is the senior writer for DallasStars.com. Mike, Jamie Benn didn't play last night for the Stars in their victory over the Capitals. Do you expect him to be back in the lineup for the game tomorrow afternoon in Winnipeg, or do you think that the hit from Miles Wood that Jim Montgomery didn't like and was vocal about is going to hold him out for another game?
I think it won't. I think he should play. He skated in the morning skate yesterday and said he wanted to play. Jim Montgomery said, you know, afterwards that Jamie basically was pushing to be in the game, and that the Stars just decided, you know what, you know, let's let him get completely healed. Montgomery has said he's not in concussion protocol. He's not been in concussion protocol. So that, you know, they don't tell us it's all upper body injury, but you can assume it's something in the chest or the shoulder, you know, where he got hit. So in that regard, you know, I think they do want to be cautious, just because you don't want to go out there and you know, have him mess it up again. And we've seen what happened when they lost John Klingberg for 18 games. You don't want to lose one of your best players. So if it means sitting out Jamie Benn for one game, I think they're fine with that. I can't imagine, you know, them saying, well, you know, he needs to sit out another. I mean, that's a possibility, obviously. But my guess is everybody in the room believes he'll be playing tomorrow night.
Mike, and, you know, I don't want to, you know, dwell on a negative right now because the Stars are playing so well and they're third in the Central Division. But, you know, Sean Shapiro had a quote, and I believe you retweeted it, and it was Jim Montgomery on Valerie Nichushkin, who still has yet to score a goal this year, and I believe he's playing on the top line now, but he said that he doesn't really view Valerie Nichushkin as an offensive player, and I think his quote was, he's hard to play against because of his forechecking ability, and he's also very responsible defensively, But what did you make of those comments? Because Nichushkin is a guy that has offensive ability, but this year it seems like he just hasn't had any luck around the net and just can't seem to score any goals.
Well, and it's interesting. I mean, I think Jim Montgomery comes to that conclusion from watching Val when he drives the net. You know, when you look at Tyler Seguin, he's hitting posts and he's making goalies make fantastic saves. And you sit there and go, that guy's going to score, right? You know, you just know that. He's Tyler Seguin, obviously. But you just see the process of him getting to areas. You know, you could even look at Devin Shore or Jason Dickinson or Dennis Gerianov, you know, who got sent back down. And the opportunities they get, they force the goalie into difficult saves. And Val hasn't done that. I mean, he is a huge guy who can get to scoring areas, but once he gets there, his hands are not creating the situation where a goalie has to make a spectacular save or where the puck's coming off a pipe or, you know, anything really. I mean, he gets there and then it just kind of breaks down. And I think that's a conclusion Jim is coming to from watching that through 42 games. When he was here the last time, he was different. So I don't know what Val Nichushkin is, and I think that's the frustrating part for fans as well. The things that he is doing that are positive are very positive. I mean, he gets the puck. He controls the puck. He gets to the areas, you know, where you should be able to score. So all of that is great. But if his hands really aren't working or he doesn't have the talent that everybody thought he did, then he is. He's just a guy who's, you know, going to be, you know, he's going to have pucks bouncing off his shin pads or, you know, who might be able to slam home a rebound from 3 feet or something like that. So that it's a really difficult question for a first-round draft pick who, you know, we really thought might be a guy who could score 25 goals. So it's the jury's still out, but, you know, after half a season, you're like, whoa, you know, why is he not taking advantage of these opportunities that he's earning? And, you know, if the conclusion is he's not a goal scorer, well, you know, then that's a pretty strong conclusion.
You know, Mike, there was a little confusion ahead of the game yesterday in terms of the lineup card when Dallas looked like they were starting Ben Bishop instead of Anton Khudobin. Did they, like, how did those guys handle it? Because it would seem to, you know, I saw the talk on the press row was you guys thought that it was going to be Bishop who had to start because he was initially circled. But it ended up being Khudobin who started. So how did those guys handle it after the game?
They were great. Jim Montgomery took full responsibility. He just has said, you know, he's filling out the lineup card. He circled Ben Bishop's name before, and he circled it again. And, you know, obviously he said it in the morning. Anton Khudobin let them out for the pregame skate. You know, everything was indicating that Khudobin was playing other than the lineup card. So then, you know, a rookie coach and everything, he says, look, I'm sorry I messed this up. What do we do now? The rule book says technically the goalie should start the game that's circled. And then what they'll do is wait for the first stoppage of play. They were joking last night that Khudobin and Bishop were talking about changing on the fly. So, so like, you know, puck goes down into the offensive end and boom, they change goalies. So it was all funny. But what they honestly did, I think, is they talked to the officials. I think they talked to Washington's people. Everybody said it's no big deal to start Khudobin. Both of them were standing out there on the ice for the national anthem. So, you know, we were kind of curious as to what they were going to do. But basically they just worked it out so Khudobin could start in goal, and it went on just like a normal game after that.
And ended in a good victory for the Dallas Stars over the defending Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals. The Stars and the Jets tomorrow afternoon in Winnipeg. Mike Hajka is a senior writer for DallasStars.com. Mike, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thank you.
Take care, Mike. When we come back, more on the Jets. We talk about the bottom six forwards. How would you like to see the Jets line them up? Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Yeah, I like playing with Jack a lot. It's nice having a righty, kind of a forehand-to-forehand pass. Come up the ice, he plays with, you know, a lot of speed and some vision. And when he's on his game, he's on his game. So, yeah, trying to kind of continue what we started last game for sure.
That was Andrew Kopp, Winnipeg Jets centerman now. talking about playing with Jack Roslovic, some of his new line mates. Of course, he's been playing with Brendan Lemieux as well. As Kopp moves from the wing, where we had seen him for so long as a member of the TLC line, back to being the centerman for the fourth line between Roslovic and Lemieux. Of course, that all might get shuffled around again with Nikolai Ehlers' injury, but we will know more about that a little bit later this afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Frank has a great backyard rink going.
Yeah, I saw that.
For his daughter.
For his daughter, yeah.
And I'm assuming he's playing on it a little bit too, but mainly for his daughter.
Yeah. You're going to be a homeowner very shortly. Are you going to build a backyard rink in there?
I definitely do not have enough room for a backyard rink.
River
Heights backyards aren't exactly conducive to backyard rinks.
Fair enough.
I've got a pond in my backyard. It's got some ice on it.
That's true. You do have a pond. I actually don't know the size of your backyard either. Anyways.
Massive. It stretches from Wellington Crescent.
What is this, Architectural Digest?
It's the Minooka State is what that is. Anyway, I always find it interesting the number of people who still to this day build backyard rinks. Darren Dreger on New Year's Eve, I don't know if you saw it, on his Twitter feed, tweets out pictures of...
That's Canada. Backyard rinks are... That's Canadiana at its finest.
It is.
Our boy Paulie Edmonds builds quite a backyard rink.
Yeah. Drew, the overall decor of your home?
I would suggest...
Postmodern?
No, it's definitely more... modern with some elements of mid-century modern.
How do you
well.
Answer this?
How do I answer that? Apparently,
somewhat seriously. Okay.
Well, I think I treat him with respect. It's not a bad thing to treat Ezzy with respect every now
you
and
see
then.
See that grin? The listeners can't see the grin on Ezzy's face right now, but just envision that grin that you more often than not see. That's the grin Ezzy's got on his face.
That's something eating grin.
Yeah, exactly. The word you're not allowed to say on air, eating grin,
but
is
Jim
right.
Lights is obviously allowed to say it, though, right?
Well, he wasn't on radio at that point in time. You're allowed to say what you want when it's a rant, apparently. In any event, the Jets' bottom six, like I mentioned, it might change around now with Nikolai Ehlers and his status up in the air. But lately, you know, you have Kopp, as I mentioned, centering that fourth line with Roslovic and Lemieux. You got Lowry with Tanev and with Perreault. The TLC line, which had been so effective for so long and not playing altogether right now. Do you like what Paul Maurice is doing with the Jets' bottom six forward group right now, or would you like to see some changes and maybe go back to the TLC line and then have a more skilled fourth line with Roslovic and Perreault and maybe Appleton or Lemieux or whomever at that point in time? Is it time to reunite the TLC line more or less?
Yeah, it's a great question. I do think it's time to reunite the TLC line, and I think it's time to start calling that the fourth line, or ideally you want to call that the fourth line. In terms of skill, right, guys? I'm not talking in terms of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've seen the TLC line or the Lowry-Tanev line, if you want to call it that, because Perreault was up there when Kopp is not on that line.
Right.
He still is.
Lately, Perreault has been playing
as you mentioned,
on the wing there.
Right. Perreault moved lines because Ehlers was injured. But I do like the TLC line a lot, and I think most people do, and I do think it's time to go back to it. And, you know, quite frankly, I do think, and we've been talking about this, guys, for, 2 months now, I mean, a guy like Jack Roslovic, he has to get going. I mean, this is a guy that not only was he a first-round pick, but this is a guy that has oodles of offensive ability. I mean, I think you have to get him going. I mean, think about how dangerous it would be in the playoffs. Well, and Roslovic was there, but he wasn't playing necessarily every game. But how dangerous it would be to have a guy like Jack Roslovic on your third line. I mean, if your third line is, you know, a combination of... Let's say, you know, Mason Appleton, Jack Roslovic, Nick Patan.
Perreault, Jack Roslovic, and somebody they acquire at the trade deadline.
And you know, I actually like Andrew Kopp as a center, but I think what happens there is when you've got, for example, Dave, a line of Andrew Kopp, Jack Roslovic, Brendan Lemieux, to me, what is that? Is that a scoring line? Is it a skill line? Or is it more of a checking line? I mean, I think it's kind of a mixture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jack Roslovic is not a guy that you can ask to play a similar role as a Brandon Tanev or Andrew Kopp. Jack Roslovic is a goal scorer. He's a playmaker, mm-hmm. right? So I do think that they have to get him going specifically because Brandon Tanev is putting the puck in the net. Adam Lowry is putting the puck in the net. And, you know that Lowry and Tanev are going to stay together. Paul Maurice likes to keep pairs together. He likes to keep Scheifele and Wheeler together, and you know, he likes to keep Little and Laine together. And then, you know, Connor and Ehlers have flip-flopped on the top two lines. But
And Lowry and Tanev.
And Lowry and Tanev are the other pair there. So ideally for me, the TLC line is probably your fourth line. And this is obviously, you know, not factoring in a potential move prior to the trade deadline. But, I mean, for me, my ideal third line is probably, you know, Perreault, Roslovic, and Appleton. I mean, to me, that's a solid skill line. Now, are you a little bit concerned maybe if they're giving up too much defensively? That is, I think, the crux of the issue here. I think Paul Maurice has issues with playing that line too much because he thinks maybe they give up too much on the defensive side of the puck. Appleton, being a rookie, I mean, Roslovic, you know, he's still learning the defensive side of the NHL game. I mean, Matty Perreault is your responsible defensive player there, right? So to me, that would probably be your ideal bottom six.
Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I talked about it in a previous segment. That's my thoughts as well. I think you put Perreault with those guys, with Roslovic and either, I don't care, Lemieux, Appleton, or Patan as the third winger, and you've got yourself a decent you know, third line that can be responsible defensively but also put the puck in the net. And then you've got that fourth line. And again, as he's right, who cares how you call him? You know, usage is completely going to be...
You know, 3A, 3B.
It doesn't really matter exactly. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, right now... To me, I was just looking, like, the Tampa Bay Lightning, third line, I think, is produced about almost 30 goals for them. The Jets, third line, I think, has about 14 or 16 goals. So
you've got Anthony Cirelli, you've got Yanni Gourde on that third line.
That's right. So I just think, like, again, you want to match up with the big boys, right? The Jets want to be a Stanley Cup contender, and you have to do the things that are going to make you, you know, into that role. And I think, again, I think it's not even so much right now about the wins. I think, you know, we always talk about in hockey about the process, and this right now to me is the establishment of the player's confidence. And I think in order to do that, you have to get them more into bigger minutes in games right now, because you don't want to have to be reliant if, you know, you have an injury late in the season or one of your big guys goes down and you say, okay, great, well, Jack Roslovic's been playing 7 minutes a game, but now we need you to play 17 minutes a game. Jack Roslovic's conditioning isn't a problem. Jack Roslovic's probably the top five in the Jets right now in terms of his physical conditioning. So whether he can handle the requirement to play that many minutes isn't the issue. It's a function of, you know, just jumping a player from 7 to 17 is significant.
Increasing,
I don't care
their role.
Yeah, and I don't care who you are. That's especially for a younger player in the NHL. So to me, again, the key isn't, I don't even care what you call the lines or how you even construct the lines. It's the balance within those lines. And to me, you're making a mistake if you're not using your lines. And again, part of it is also, you know, where have the Jets been playing from? Have they been playing from behind in some of these games that they're chasing? That they need. That's what I'm saying. So they need to use their top lines in order to try and, you know, to tie the game and or go ahead. But the fact is, again, I think you have to give these guys the opportunity to play some sort of important minutes in the NHL. Otherwise, it's just a waste of time.
Well, as he talks about, you know, the concerns maybe about the defensive responsibility, and, you know, tomorrow is game 41 on the season. If you're not comfortable with their defensive player, they're playing their own zone after game 41, when are you going to get to be comfortable? I mean, I think there's a point in time where you sort of just have to... You have to go with it, to your point. Get them the experience, and maybe there's some growing pains.
That's the whole point. Trial by fire.
Yeah, I mean, because to your point, even you made in the first hour of the show, you've banked a significant number of points at, you know, after game 40, where you're in first place in the Central Division. You're playing well, barring some sort of horrendous collapse. You're clearly going to be a top playoff team in the Western Conference. It might be time now to maybe go through those growing pains a little bit.
Right, and... You know, I said that Mason Appleton would be my ideal third-line winger, and that's not to take anything away from Brendan Lemieux. If you've listened to the show over the years, you know how much I love Brendan Lemieux. And the game on New Year's Eve was arguably his best game as an NHL player, right? And if you go back to the games in Finland, guys, you know, when he took the penalty and then he was suspended, I mean, that was kind of the low point, and I think Brendan Lemieux has really adapted after that was probably, like I said, probably the low point of the season. So I think Lemieux would be a suitable winger, but the point is, Roslovic and Perreault, as skilled players on your third line, being given regular minutes, I think can really make the Jets an even more dangerous team. I mean, look at the Penguins, okay, guys? They've won 8 games in a row. They're now first in the Metro Division. right?
Mm-hmm.
Who did they have on their fourth line? They had Riley Sheahan.
Yeah.
They had Zach Aston-Reese, and they had, I think it was Matt Cullen, right? Those three players. They had Phil Kessel on their third line. Phil Kessel. I mean, if you have Phil Kessel on your third line, you're going to be a very dangerous team. Same thing with Roslovic and Perreault. I mean, these guys aren't slouches. Sure, they're maybe not producing at the level you'd like them to be producing at, but I think that's been an issue for the Jets, is to find that perfect mix there on the bottom lines. Not the TLC line. That's been a steady line, but it's more so whatever you want to call it, the fourth line or the 3B, third line.
Yeah.
It's finding that perfect mix. And, you know, sure, they've got some injuries right now, but Ehlers' injury shouldn't really affect that line too much, because you're going to see probably Connor move up to the top line, Perreault move up to the second line. So they should be able to get the line that they want, but right now Brendan Lemieux in the lineup, Mason Appleton isn't, and he's playing some good hockey, but you know, they're still trying to find that perfect mix, and they've got a lot of time, as you mentioned, Drew. They've still got, you know, a half of a season here, but
time to find it is now. When we come back, AJ Haefeli is going to be joining us. He's the Avalanche beat writer for BSNDenver.com. We'll talk about the Avalanche, who've been struggling as of late but had a big victory last night against the New York Rangers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.